Sit down. Sit down.
Oh, Mr. Irwin, would you like to tell us about your childhood growing up in the Aberdeen area?
I don't know how you knew I grew up in Aberdeen, but I did. Well, there are a few things I think that pertinent to my early childhood in Aberdeen that I think maybe some people might be interested in. One thing that occurs to me, I remember when I was about 10 to 12 years old, we used to send corn for the local canners. Now in those days, that was in the early 20s, there were many canners in the area, probably a whole 7 or 8 at least that I know of. And they all had fields of corn in the Aberdeen area and also down on what is now Aberdeen Proving Ground. And we used to send corn for $1 a day, I remember. It was a 12-hour day and backbreaking. Another incident which allied with that one would be when I was about the same age, along that 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, along that area. They used to have a two-horse wagon coming by on Post Road. I lived on Post Road, which was, I guess, now Old Route 7. But in those days, it was just Post Road. And they used to pull these wagon loads of sweet corn to the canning houses. And the other fellows and myself would say, "Hey, mister, give me some corn." And we kept a pretty good lot of corn to be eaten at the our homes all summer long. That's just a couple of little things that I remember. I think back in those days, we had didn't have refrigerators. We had the ice man who came around. And I believe it was Aberdeen Ice House. And they had a nice man who came around. And matter of fact, my brother-in-law, Corny Cronin, who was, may have interviewed him too, I don't know. But he worked while he was in college in the summer carrying ice. And I guess they had in those days the ice boxes. You probably don't remember those, I'm sure. Unless you saw them in a museum somewhere.
I've heard about them.
Well, they were a necessary evil, believe me. They were a lot better than, well, it was the only way you could keep food, really, except on the farms they had ice houses for holes dug in the ground. And they would call that later on when we moved there to in the Bel Air area on the farm. Well, there are a couple of little incidences that I do remember. I also recall riding in a horse and buggy down Bel Air Avenue. My aunt had a horse called Daisy. And I remember we enjoyed so much being able to ride in that buggy. And of course, there were very few automobiles back in those days, so the buggies were sort of a thing of the day. Although automobiles were just beginning to come in at that time, this was also in the 20s. A little bit later on, I tatted at the old Forest Green Country Club, which the older portion of Parker County would probably remember. It was a very nice 9-hole golf course down there. It's now completely grown up. And I think its demise occurred at as the beginning of World War II, when they put rationing on. And after rationing, of course, people who used to come out from Baltimore, it wasn't as popular a sport in Harford County at that time because there weren't as many golfers here. And people came out from Baltimore, and of course, with the deer thrashing, that missed that in the park. How far do you want me to go on this?
Maybe you can just tell us about what your home was like, and maybe your parents, your brothers and sisters.
Well, my mother and father, who are both dead now, I've been dead for quite a number of years. One was born in Georgetown, Pennsylvania. The other was born in Downingtown, Pennsylvania. And my father's father moved down here on Paradise Road. They called the section Paradise, which is a section of Aberdeen. I think there were only two or three houses on that road at that time. The old Paradise Road, which still exists, of course, but it's rather crowded at the time. The house that I was born upstairs in one of the homes there. You didn't go to the hospital in those days. And Dr. Creek delivered me, except my, I don't recall that, but that is what they told me. And I had a sister who was born in Scranton, Virginia. My father, after coming down here and getting married, moved down to Scranton, Virginia, and went into the laundry business with a partner down there, and he later, this is prior to World War I, and my sister, who is Lee Cronin, married to Denise Cronin, they lived the other side of town. He was he was president of Commercial Savings Bank. He's retired, and he's now chairman of the board of Commercial Savings Bank, which has been taken over by the Virginia Bank, too, so he's progressing there. Anyway, my sister, who is older than I by a couple of years, was born in Scranton, Virginia. My father had this laundry down there, and of course there was a lot of steam involved in those days, and apparently he got typhoid fever, which was a deadly disease back in those years, and almost died. The doctor told him he had to get out of the laundry business, so he came up here and got into the lumber business, cutting timber. And that's how we happened to stay in Harford County. Well, let's see. Well, one thing I think is rather interesting, I don't know. We lived in what was called across the street from the Housing Corporation, which was built in World War I to house people who were going to work at Aberdeen Proving Ground. And they brought quite a large group of people from Sandy Hook, New Jersey, down to Harford County and housed them in these homes down there on Post Road and Rigdon Road and various ones that still exist down there. And the homes still exist, too. They were well built. They weren't scab housing. And those people who came down there mostly were Americans who had just come off the boat. I don't think they'd been off the boat too long. A good portion of them came from Ireland. They were Irish, and they established a little Catholic church right behind where we lived. And I remember seeing them go to church there. There were the youth Duggins and the McPherson's, and there were two of them, and I still know a lot of those people and see them right regularly. They were very, a good portion of them went away to college and have become quite active through in this community and many others throughout the country. But, if you look back on it, I remember those people, they're all, of course, the first generation, they're all a have all passed on now. Mrs. Duggan died about 3 or 4 years ago, and she was well up in her 90s. I remember her quite well. But it was a very, very fine group of people. And we were privileged to be able to go out and ring doorbells in those days, which was one of the things we used to do as a kid. We ring doorbells just about dusk and then run. You had a lot of fun without spending much money back in those years. I don't know what you want or how much you want to use. We moved to Bel Air when I was 14. I worked with Tyler.
Sit down, Tyler.
That's a good deal. Hope they know what I'm talking about. I think I'm talking about a dog on the table. Uh-huh. Give her any encouragement. You afraid of dogs?
I know. I'm just...
Tyler, come here.
I was going to ask.
Come here. Sit down. Sit. 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 And be a good girl. Very friendly, a little bit too friendly. We moved up here when I was 14, and my father had bought a farm up here. Matter of fact, this is part of the property that he bought back in 1923, I believe it was. And we had sold various areas around here over a period of years for development. But when I was in, I went to high school in Bel Air and grade school in Aberdeen. And one of our, activities back in, back to Aberdeen in a second, I just recalled one of our outdoor activities was shooting marbles. Now, I don't believe they do that much anymore.
Tyler. That's all right.
Did she bother you? She bothered you.
No.
I'll put her inside.
Oh, that's all right.
And then we moved up here, and I worked on building Route 40 between Haverty Grace and the Harford County line down at Gunpowder River. My brother-in-law had just gotten out of college, and I think that was his first job. He wasn't my brother-in-law at that time, but he was the engineer for that job, and several of the fellows from the high school worked for 2 summers for the Sky Abbey Construction Company that built Route 40. I always say that I used pick and shovel. I was pick and shovel work, and I always say I built Route 40. I just skip over my later years, if you want me to. I went in the service. After I got out of high school, I studied music at Peabody Institute in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And then also studied in Philadelphia at the Credit Institute. And I went in the service right after I had started. I thought the music business was for the birds, so I started with Western Maryland College for my mother and sister. And after doing a couple of years there, I went in the Army with a pal of mine to get the year over with. But back in those days, it was a good idea, I'll be back in a year, because war had not been declared. This was 1941, and he and I went in service at the same time, and I ended up doing over 4 years in service. And little did I know that 1 year would be stretched out. But, so when I got out, I went to New York and worked in Broadway shows up there for 5 years. And that's my wife, who was a dancer at the Copacabana. And after my last show, which was First Child, intended. I came back here and that was in 1950. Worked for 30 years in radio and retired, I guess it's been about 6-7 years ago. And we wanted something to do, so I started publishing a little TV book, and I'm still doing it. But we try to not work any harder than we can help, you know, and we want to enjoy ourselves, we like to enjoy traveling and that sort of thing. I don't know, that's the story of my life, in a nutshell.
Just a few questions, I guess, to get some detail. Could you maybe tell us about your year of in school, such as your grammar school in Aberdeen and then the high school in Bel Air, and some of the teachers or courses you may remember?
Well, in Aberdeen, I tell you, I hate to say this, but I think teachers in those years were much more dedicated than most of them are now. When they started teaching, it was a lifetime profession, and they did it, and they did it well. And I had a great deal of respect for all of my teachers. Matter of fact, my first grade teacher is well up in her 90s. She must be almost 100, Miss Helen Cronin. And she also took my sister, who was in her 70s. So Miss Helen's got to be right up there. Of course, you know, back in those years, you had a teacher's certificate when you graduated from normal school, which was a 2-year college course. Other schools like Western Maryland, for example, a local college, also had a 4-year course. My mother graduated from there, and she still taught grade school. She graduated in 1905. And a little thing she used to tell us, which might be before my time, but she used to tell us that in college at that time, the boys had to walk on one side of the street and the girls had to walk on the other. And they could date, I think it was just like on Saturday or Sunday night, with a chaplain. So times have changed. As I say, my teachers were very much dedicated people. Miss Helen Cronin in the first grade, and Miss Jones in the second grade. I think it was Miss Johns, who is still living, I believe, in the third grade. Fourth grade was Miss Spokes. Fifth grade was Miss Forward. Sixth grade, I take that back. The fifth grade was Miss Brick, who is living in Bel Air now, by the way. And then isn't supposed to be married later on in the rather late in life. I don't recall what her name was now. I always think of her as Miss Brick. She taught my children, too. In the seventh grade was Mr. Price, and the sixth grade was Miss Brooks. I guess I got them all in. In high school up here, they were also very dedicated, extremely dedicated people. Frankly, I wasn't too much interested in the education. I had my primary likes in those years, I think, were athletics and girls, not necessarily in that order, but I thoroughly enjoyed my tenure in high school. I tell you, it was a wonderful year. A lot of people disliked those years, but I had a wonderful time in high school. Are you from around here?
Oh, yeah, the Churchville area.
Oh, are you? We lived in Churchville prior to coming here. Rolling Green. Is that where you live?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is that right? And your name is Johnson?
Yes, Johnson.
Huh?
Yes, we live on Middleton Court.
Middleton Court. We lived on Finney Avenue, right at the end of Finney Avenue. We've been here, I guess, 8 years now.
Hmm.
Yeah. I lived two different houses in Bel Air before we moved down there. It's tougher for the bill collectors to catch up with you. And you keep moving around a lot. Now, actually, we built a house in 1950 on Ridgewood Road, and then Bob Sayer, who built a house across the road from us, became ill, and our family was growing. We had three children, and so we decided to buy his place, and when it came up for sale, we bought that, got it corner across the street from the house that I had built. And we lived there 11 years. And then I moved to Churchville, and I think I lived there about 7 or 8 years, and then moved up here, built this place.
Well, in high school, what were some of the athletic programs they had when you were there?
Well, in Bel Air, we had the only basketball team in the county, which may seem peculiar now. I believe there was one more team, and I think it was in Cardiff. I think it was Cardiff that had a team. I don't know why Cardiff, because they probably only had, 100 people in the entire school. Mm. And you're familiar with the area. You remember the old grade school on Gordon Street? Well, that was the old high school. And we had a doctor who lived right across the street. The old residents would remember Dr. T. Bird Hopkins, and he was a general practitioner, and Mrs. Hopkins used to say that when basketball and track practice came along, there was no sense trying to get the doctor, because he was at the school. He was our coach, and he developed some real good teams. We used to play all over the state. Go down to Cambridge. I remember that was an overnight job, and we used to thoroughly enjoy that. That's the only way it was a good game. We played some basketball games in Baltimore. And track was a big thing in those days. We developed some real good people. Jim Kehoe, who was later athletic director at the University of Maryland, my good friend. Frank Cronin, who was my brother-in-law's brother, and we were all in school together. He was later golf coach at the University of Maryland. He boxed down there in boxing days. He played football. And he was also, well, he was just a good general all-around athlete. Jim Kehoe was later, as I say, athletic director at the University of Maryland. His mother is still living up here. Just talked to him on the phone now last weekend. Just trying to get together. But he's retired. And so is Harp Cronin, who we call Harp up here, his name is Harper, Frank Harper, they call him Frank down in the now. But we had good track and basketball teams in those years, and it was primarily because of Dr. Bird Hopkins and his conditioning. Did you ever hear of him? You probably never heard of him.
I've heard of some of his relatives.
Have you? Yeah. Well, he had four sons, and one of them died at about 6 or 7 years old of pneumonia. And I remember Doc saying, this was in 1935 or 36, I remember him saying, if we had just had one of the sulfa drugs in those years, or one of those drugs, such as penicillin, had been in existence, he said, I could have saved it. But he had three other sons. One went to the military academy, and one taught at Park Community College. Well, I've kind of rambled on into almost nothing, you know.
Well, that's all right. Let's see.
See, when you get old, you ramble.
But could you tell us about what you used to do in your free time, like your social life or different dances or things in the winter or summer that you would do?
Well, when I was a kid, we enjoyed sledding. That was a big sport. Of course, we needed the snow, and it seemed to me we had a lot more snow than we do now. I don't know. But, of course, it wasn't removed from the streets like it is now. And I know in Aberdeen, we had places down Rigdon Road with a nice hill, and as soon as it snowed, we'd go down to Rigdon Road. We didn't have to worry about the cars and anything like that. We just lay right in the middle of the street. Well, I think many of the activities in later years have gotten very sophisticated, you know. I took up skiing when I was 60. My boy talked me into it, and I still enjoy it. I'm no hot cat. I do a lot of traversing. You ski?
I'd like to, but not really.
Well, it's a very enjoyable sport, but in my skiing back when I was a kid involved barrel staves, you know, going down a little bank. Tied them on with rubber bands or something like that. Let's say, sports have gotten very sophisticated and so much more expensive. There's so many more things to do nowadays than there were back then. Mm-hmm. I think people switch the radio was in existence. We had no television. I remember the first radio we had was an Atwater Kent and had three dials, and you had to line up all three dials in order to get a station. And you kept a chart of every station you pulled in. And you wore earphones. Now, they did have later on, they had speakers, but you wore earphones so only one person could listen at a time. And I used to fight over that quite often, about whose turn it was, especially with my sister now. But, I don't know, you know, and so much has occurred when you stop and think about it. In history, historically, over the last 60 years. I mean, it's amazing. I remember when I was 10 years old, my mother and my aunt, sister, and several others drove over to Catonsville. I'm sure it was Catonsville, to what was called the Fair of the Iron Horse. And it was in the old B&O, one of the big, huge B&O terminals. And they showed all of the trains going back many, many years at that time. And I remember them saying that this fair was only going to be held every 50 years. I remember thinking, gosh, I'll be 50 years old. But, you know, I didn't hear anything about it. I think they must have forgotten about it this time. Decided not to have it. Did you ever hear anything about it in the last 8 or 10 years?
I know they have a B&O museum now.
That's the train. Where is that?
I know it's in Baltimore City somewhere.
It's in Baltimore City?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah. Well, that may have something, that may be related. I'm sure it is somewhere. Yes, it must be. It must be. But this was a regular. I mean, we spent the entire day going over and going through these trains, and you go back to the old trains back in the 1800s, you know. They had the old ones with the funnel stacks on them. It was all very interesting. Well, I don't know how I got on trains, talking about athletics and girls, you know. any other particular thing that
would you ramble
on?
Well, could you tell us about what it was like when you were helping to build Route 40?
Well, I think the worst part of it was having to get up about 4:30 every morning. We had to be at work at 7 o'clock, and we rode down usually with my brother-in-law. So we had to be ready because he got there about a half an hour early before everyone else did. And I met many interesting people working on the job down there. I started out as with pick and shovel, and the next summer I started out pick and shovel, and I remember Al Sky Abbey, who was the boss, one of the two bosses, Alan and Sky Abbey. Now, they were from Wilmington. And he came up and he watched me for a while, and he talked in a broken accent, I suppose Italian accent, and he called me, and I said, "Yes, sir, what do you want, sir?" He said, he pointed to an old bulldozer, and he said, you think you run it out of machine? And I said, well, I'll try, sir. I showed you. So we took it over in the field there, and he showed me about the blade and the hydraulic, had a hydraulic lift on it. And he said, you plow up that field. So I worked with that thing for a couple of hours, learning to how to use the blade and power it properly. So I turned it over. And then he came around the next day, and he said, I want you one to work the drag line. So here I was working this thing where you had little stakes, and you had to come back that close to the stakes. And of course, if you knock one of those over, you got to, they gave you a pretty good pacing. But it was really good because I think we were making $13 a week, and he raised me to $18. And I could hardly spend it all. I bought a car for $40 from a junk dealer and put... We went to... You're always pretty much tired. You worked here. Say started 7 o'clock in the morning, and you were through at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And by the time you worked all day, you were pretty tired. Although youth, we usually snap back pretty fast. And we didn't usually work on Saturdays, as I recall. And boy, that gave us Saturday and Sunday. We really had a ball trying to spend our money. I guess one of the biggest things I can make is going to Carlin's Park. I don't know if that's still in existence or not. I don't hear anything about it. But we used to go to Carlin's Park and ride the ride. And a couple of dozen, you know. And, of course, try to get a date every night if we could. But it's very interesting. Another thing too, back in those days, not too many people went steady. You know, this thing today, just like, are you married?
Oh, no.
You're still in school. Yeah. Where are you at school?
I'm over at T. Melton.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he lived right behind me for many years, T. Melton Wright.
Mm.
And matter of fact, he's a cousin of mine. My middle name is Wright. And he's a cousin of mine. It was back in those days, he called everybody cousin of mine. Still up the time that he died, I called him Cousin Milton. yeah, my grandfather was superintendent of schools here in Harford County. His name is Charles T. Wright. I was named after him. And he was superintendent, I guess, up until the time that he died. And then Milton Wright was the superintendent. So you didn't have too many superintendents. I think going back into the very early 1900s, I think it was a Mr. Worthington. I think they were related to the Worthingtons around here. And he was the superintendent of schools. And Charles T. Wright, my grandfather, and then Milton Wright was the next one, and then of course Charlie Willis, you remember him, and Al Roberti. And now we're up to present time. They say in they stay in office a right good while. But things are entirely different. Well, I've rambled on and rambled on for over a half an hour now. Is there anything else I could talk about?
Well, would you like to talk about, I guess, your theatrical career, and maybe something about Gordon McRae that you worked with in some of the shows?
Well, Gordon just died this year, early in the year, and after we left New York, we left in 1950, I still kept up with quite a number of the people. Used to hear from some of them occasionally. Used to hear from Gordon. Used to see him on occasion. And he and Sheila. Sheila was very talented person, his wife, and they had three little children, and they were real cute. I think two of them are movie stars, or were, or something. I don't know. Heather was one. I don't recall the names of the others. But it's a very tough life to bring up a family. And that was one of the primary reasons that I came back down here. I'd lost those years in the service, and I had quite a... I gave myself about 5 years to really get moving, and I always had a job up there. My first job was understudy to Gordon in a show called Free to Make Ready. And then I worked in the, for about 12, 13 months in the nightclub circuit. Looks like we're going to have to take our machine.
Is it operating?
Yes. Even this, you're telling us about your career in New York City. Could you maybe tell us a little bit more about them?
Well, as I mentioned, I worked at several shows up there. I was very fortunate in order to get work, actually, because there are an awful lot of people who want to get in that business, because this was prior to television. Television was just coming in. I did several television shows when there were only 600 sets in New York. And that doesn't give you much of an audience, does it? Some of the people I worked with, I worked in two shows with Ray Bolger. I worked in a show with Milton Berle. I worked in a show with... Alfred Godfrey was in one of the shows I was in. He only stayed in the show for a very brief period of time. He had a problem with his hip, and he couldn't stand up too long. And I think he had that operated on either prior to or just afterwards. That was just before he started what was called his talent sketch program. I worked with old Ed Wynn. He was the fire chief in radio back many years ago. A lot of people remember him. And, Brenda Forbes. I did some modeling when we were playing in Chicago. Played Chicago for 10 months. Of course, it was an old show. We played in New York and closed in New York, so just for something to do. I think they still published that magazine. That was 1947.
I think that was on your album cover, something similar to that.
Probably was. Yes, it is. George Jessel, I just happened to notice that was another guy that I worked with in a nightclub job I had at that time. We did a show called The New Look Review, and they would change the star about every 3 months. And that's when I worked with Pearl. And Ed Wynn, George Jessel, and Lula Molina, the band sisters, Jerry Giacomo, he and I did the production members. As I say, it's a right nice life if you're single. I wouldn't advise it for someone who's married, to tell you the truth. Oh, that's it. Anything else I can tell you?
When you came back to Harford County, can you tell us about your career working with the radio in that time?
Yeah. How did you know I was in the radio business? Did I tell you that?
Well, we have a form as a brief summary of your life.
That was when somebody called me on the telephone, I guess. I came back here and I was Actually, I didn't want to do anything. I was just going to relax. I tell you the truth, I didn't like New York particularly. I like what it had to offer, but it's such a rat race up there that I enjoyed getting at it. And I had an old car, which I got right after the war, and I would run on down here after a show would be through, and then maybe spend a couple of months and then go back to New York. So I was down here, the show I was in at that time was over in May, I believe, and so came on back down here, just wanted to be in the country for a while. And while I was down here, someone told me they were building a radio station over in Haverty Grace. I went over and met the guy who was going to be one of the owners of it, and I had gone to school with his wife, and we talked at some length, and he said, what are you going to do for the summer? And I said, oh, I'll just fool around, maybe relax a little bit. And he said, well, how about helping out the radio station here? He said, we need some people who will be here at the radio station when we open up. And I said, well, I'd be glad to help any way I can. So I ended up going on the air without any experience whatsoever. There was one fellow there named Sam Lauder who had previous radio experience, and other than he, about a week later, 2 weeks later, maybe they brought in a fellow named Ed Bakey, who was from Haverty Grace, and Ed has made a lot of movies. He wanted to get to Hollywood, and he made it, and he's done very well. He was in a picture called The Sting, and several others. I've seen him once in a while on a commercial on television. Still out there. So I guess he's making a living at it. But anyway, we went on the air, and there were only two of us, and I'd go on for an hour, and Sam would come in and go on for an hour. And I don't know. I'd like to have a recording of that. It must have been pretty horrible. But anyway, we were the only radio station in the county. I think this was 1948. And right after it came off the road, was pretty much ready. And I worked there until I went back to New York, I think that fall. I think I went back probably in around November. I had an opportunity to go on another show, and I went back. And I came back again, as I say, in 1950, and I went around to see him, and he offered me a job, and I ended up, after 30 years, being owning a part of it. I had stock in it, and I was on the board over there, and was vice president and sales manager, and I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. But, I enjoy what I'm doing now, too. But radio has changed considerably, too. The types of music that you hear now, of course, you're probably in with many of the new type music. I don't know. I'm sort of partial to the big band stuff and I know there's got to be something good about it because too many people like it, but I can't get over the ballad stuff that like Frank Sinatra and Fat Sammy Davis Jr. and that sort of performer do versus the types of lyrics that you can't understand. At least I can't understand it. I mean, I'm not hearing too well, you know. But it has changed considerably. The formats have changed. There are a lot of talk shows now. I know WBAL, which I listen to quite a bit, has a talk news format, which is very interesting. But there are many, many other stations that are have the rock format or the adjusted rock format or country music, of course, is coming big. I think country and pop sort of cross lines somewhere around the in many areas where one artist in Pop Steel will slide over into the pop music field and then can really do either one. Many of those artists, Dolly Parton for one. She looks good doing it too, you know. Well, that's about 30 years of radio right there.
Just a question. Can you tell us about maybe some of your things you would do on the radio? Happen to hear, I guess, from a friend of yours that you would do some type of shows, like in Christmas, you'd be like a Santa Claus. Could you maybe tell us about some of those things?
Well, as a matter of fact, I did a Santa Claus. I still do a Santa Claus. I used to do, I still have some tapes of it. I used to do an hour at Christmas time, usually depending on the day Christmas came, but usually say a Friday before Christmas, and Friday or Saturday. So I'd do an hour, and the kids would call in, and they would tell you what they wanted for Christmas, and then they'd, the mother would get on and she'd say, do you mind talking to Susie? She's a young one. Sometimes you talk to four or five in one family, you know. But it was real interesting. Some of the smaller ones, you couldn't understand what they wanted. You just said, oh, yes, that's right. Oh, yes, my sleigh's filled with those. Yes. But it was really interesting, and particularly the little children who really go for it, you know. I mean, they, I think they're about 4 years old now, and somebody tells them there ain't no Santa Claus. And it's a shame because, gosh, I was probably 10 years old before I got the idea, and I still bluffed it out for another year too because I figured I wasn't going to get many presents if I didn't, you know. But I did that almost every year for many years, the Santa Claus bit. And so usually about an hour. Later on, Jack Little, who is working for me now, was manager of the station up here, and he asked me to do a program for the station up here, which I did. One or 2 years. Gee, how are you going to assimilate all this? I mean,
it's quite all right like it is. Well,
I hope you take a lot of the crap out and put it and fill in with a few of the right, the proper language. Do this yourself?
I don't know, we send it away to a company and they do the transcribing and things, so.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, I just do the interviewing part, that's all. Well, over the, I guess, your time in Arthur County, or what are some of the changes that you have seen occur throughout the county?
Well, I'll tell you. As I mentioned before, when I look back 60 years ago, and think of the things the way they were, Bel Air, Aberdeen, Haverty Grace were just sleepy little towns, you know, without much activity. There's no television. You had, the influx of Baltimore had not started, it was strictly rural, and a lot of farms, dairy farms, and that sort of thing. I think that's one of the big things, big changes that we've seen in recent years. I can recall back prior to World War II, when if you were on the street in Bel Air, if you saw someone you didn't know, you said, hey, who's that? It was unusual. Now if you see someone you know, it's unusual. I'll tell you a little story that guy told me. And I thought this was right funny. Now this goes back probably to the very early 20s. Was a guy named Merck Wells. Now these people were older than I. As a matter of fact, they were probably old enough to be my parents. Was a guy named Mike Kane, who was a lawyer in Bel Air, and he had a friend named Merck Wells. He was saying when they were kids, it had to be, I said the early 20s, it had to be back in the early 1900s, very early 1900s. And Mike Kane told me this story, and I'm sure it's true. But he said he and Merck were about 16 years old, and they used to stand up on the corner there by what used to be, well, across from the Commercial Savings Bank. And there was a little restaurant just catty-cornered across from that. And he said every Saturday was an old Amishman used to come from Delta in his buggy. And he'd come down and go to Richardson's Dry Goods, and I remember that when I was a kid, which was just down the street from the old, where now Cortlandt Street. And he'd fill up a gunny sack with food for the week, take it back and throw it in his buggy, and come on back and go into the restaurant and order something in there. And he always had a big chaw of tobacco in his mouth. So Mike said they watched this for a while. There was a ledge around the restaurant up about yay high, and he used to take that chaw of tobacco and put it up there and then sit down at a table and eat. And then after he'd eat, he'd pick up the chaw tobacco and stick it back in his mouth, go back and get in the wagon and take off for Delta. And he said, Mike said he and Mert watched that for a number of weeks. So one time when he came in, they went down to the livery stable where the horses were tethered and got one. And when he put his thing up there, they just saw the back up there, they exchanged it. and then Mike, and I knew this had to be the truth, knowing Mike Kane. And he said, and he always called me Irv, he said, Irv, he said, we saw him put that thing in his mouth, and he said he got out and he got in his horse and buggy, and he said we saw him going down Main Street spitting out of both sides of the buggy. That'd be a good note to end on, that's what I think. Put that in there. But I know Mike Kane told me that, and I'm sure it's true. Might have to delete some of this, huh?
Oh, I don't know about that.
That might be the best part.
Is there anything else you might like to add?
No, I don't think I can top that.